This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest tonight is Karen Bush, who's the current president of the National Campus Ministry Association. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you.
Good to have you in the studio. Now, what is the National Campus Ministry Association?
Steve, it's the professional organization. It's one of the largest professional organizations in the world, as a matter of fact, that involves Protestant campus ministries and from across the United States. And this includes such denominations as Methodist, which is probably our largest. Probably 35% of our membership are Methodists. Hmm. Presbyterians, United Church of Christ.
Which is what you are.
Which is what I am. Disciples, Lutherans, Baptists, both American and Southern, Episcopals, and we also have a number of folks from the Catholic clergy that will join us, and anyone who is a professional in campus ministry is welcome to join in.
So these are Christian pastors who work on campuses.
Right.
And work with students and faculty and staff and universities. Now, you are an ordained United Church of Christ pastor.
That is correct.
How did you get involved in campus ministry?
How did I get involved in campus ministry? Well, let me tell you, this is starting my 21st year, so it's been a while. In fact, you and I have known each other, I think, for those 21 years. And to be honest, the journey started when I was working as a hospital chaplain in the Chicago area. And I had gone to an American Baptist seminary and had finished up there and had done a stint as a hospital chaplain, which I enjoyed. At the same time, I found myself looking for an opportunity where I might be able to work with populations of people that were at a crossroad in their lives, that where they were dealing with issues more at the beginning of their journey of life questions. And another way of putting it is I kind of burned out as a hospital chaplain.
Sure. It can happen very quickly.
I was 24 years old, worked with terminally ill children, and I was working on the psychiatric unit.
Wow.
And I loved the work, and I lived the work. I was taking night classes also. But I came down to Champaign and was what is called a Stratford House mom on campus. The American Baptists have a house there, Stratford House. And I lived there as a house mom and taught at Parkland College. And while I was working as the house mom at Stratford House, the position where I'm currently at with the United Church of Christ opened up. And it just clicked for me. And I thought, here's a place where I could work with kind of young people at a crossroad in their lives where kind of a pressure point, might be able to make a difference in a number of ways. So,
now, how did you make the change from American Baptist you were ordained Baptist originally?
No, ordained United Church of Christ. Came down, I was not ordained yet.
I'd been to American Baptist Seminary. Yeah.
Grew up at Presbyterian, at McKinley Presbyterian Church here.
Uh-huh. And then how did you make the switch to being ordained UCC?
Let me see if I can say that kind of succinctly, but that was a journey of one of the things I so appreciated about the American Baptist family, to begin with, the priesthood of all believers, that it's not like the clergy have special knowledge and special kind of relationship with God. It's we're all in this together as one family, and the clergy are leaders that help us in our faith, but that it's really the priesthood of all believers was something important to me. And I appreciated the passion and worship with the Baptists, but there were some places that had become really important to me that I was looking for other ways, other families of faith that might be able to help me, and that is particularly in social justice issues. I was getting a little frustrated with some of the walls I was hitting with wanting to be out there a little more on work for rights for lesbian, gay folks, and when I came as a Baptist to work. It's located in Community United Church of Christ, but I came to work as the campus minister, and I had not known too much about the United Church of Christ. When I worked as a hospital chaplain, one of my supervisors had heard my theology and said, "You sound very United Church of Christ," and I wasn't sure what he was talking about, and I realized later it's that one of the ways that we are faithful to God in our lives is to, if God's call in our life is to work for justice for all human beings and to reach out in compassion for kind of the least, those who are least powerful, those who have been most marginalized in our society. And that's a very important part of the United Church of Christ kind of faith and other denominations, but the United Church of Christ in particular. And so I came to the United Church of Christ as a Baptist, but once I was here, I realized for me, and everyone has their own personal journey, but for me, I'd finally found a home denominationally.
And so for 21 years?
This is starting my 21st year.
You've been the United Church of Christ campus pastor here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign.
Yes.
Now, how did you get from there, since we're talking about your life journey, how did you get from there to be president of the National Campus Ministry Association, which includes all Protestant Christian campus ministers in this country?
Well, it's very impressive. I'm very impressive. It happened because I came late to a meeting. That's kind of how it started. And those of you out there in listening who, I know many of you are part of professional organizations, might get a chuckle with me, because I started out as regional representative of the Great Lakes region. I was at a national conference for the National Campus Ministry Association. I'm trying to think where that conference was. I guess it doesn't really matter. Every year we go to a different region in the United States to have our national conference. And on this particular hour, we were breaking up with our national regions, and I'm in the Great Lakes region, so that particular group was meeting. And I was the last one to arrive, and they were deciding who was going to be their candidate, their representative for their region. I walked in the room, and they looked at me and said, "You know what? We're majority Methodist right here. We're looking for someone who's not a Methodist.
Oh.
In fact, we're looking to have more women involved. And Karen's not a Methodist, and she's female." So the hot potato fell in my lap. And now, so I can brag all I want. But really, that's kind of how it started with being regional rep. Because everyone in the room really is very, very qualified to be in this position.
How many regions are there?
I think we have five regions. We have North. I think there's five regions.
So, among other things, you would plan the national conference.
When it's in your particular region, you would help plan it.
Okay.
Help plan it. So we were in Chicago a couple of years ago, and actually I just stepped into the position, so I could have been on the planning team, but I wasn't at that time.
Now, when did you actually begin as president?
So president, I started a year ago this last September.
Okay.
And that
how long
was
is
another
the term?
Journey. You serve as president-elect for a year, then you serve as president for the next 2 years, and then historically you are post-president for 2 years, but now we reduce that to one.
Okay.
So it's a total 4-year commitment.
Which is considerable.
It is.
Beyond
it is.
What you're doing here as a campus pastor, working with the students and faculty and so forth at this university to take on that national responsibility.
It's fantastic. It really is, though. It's a fantastic kind of bird's eye view of a lot of things.
So tell me what the organization does.
The organization, we have several resources that we try to provide to our constituents. We have a professional journal that comes out twice a year called the Occasional Papers, where we look for cutting edge resources and scholarship and ideas that we can pull together to be sent out to campus ministers across the United States, our membership. And we also have a newsletter that goes out twice a year that provides like latest critiques of those books and articles having to do with what's happening in campus ministry. Probably one of the central things we do, Steve, is we provide a yearly conference. And again, every year we have a national conference. This last year we were in Manhattan, and every year we rotate which region in the United States it's going to be. So we end up in a cycle. So we hit all the different regions. And then every fourth year we have an international interfaith conference. And this is, I think we've only had five of those. And you went to the first, I believe.
In Durham, England, yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And was that interfaith, or was that one particularly Christian?
It was mainly Christian, but there were some representatives from other faiths. And I think because of that and the success of that, it did grow.
I think you were at the original spark of when all that took place, kind of came out of that.
It was a fascinating event. Mainly Europeans were there, but there were some from this country who got there, and some from other continents. But the Europeans were the host at that first one.
I've been to two now. The first one was in Vancouver, Canada, and we had 30 different countries represented, predominantly Christian at that point, but we did have a number of Buddhist, Jewish rabbis, and Muslim imams. The last one we had was a year ago, and this was in Sydney, Australia, and we had many more folks representing like the rainbow of world religions, and it was fantastic. It was phenomenal. It was truly phenomenal. There was one particular evening I remember where we had Buddhist monks singing side by side with a number of Orthodox rabbis that had come over from Israel and singing in harmony, a song they had done together with cantering in worship. That was just breathtaking. And
now, you're very committed to your particular brand of Christianity. You're Protestant, you're UCC, one of the most progressive of the Protestant denominations in terms of social action, and you're very committed to that. How can you maintain that commitment and at the same time be open to Jewish rabbis and Buddhist monks in this interfaith setting?
Well, let me throw in there also, in my heart, evangelical Christians also that are part of the family. And I appreciate the question. And the answer that comes to me that I live with is I love the metaphor of the visually impaired individuals and the elephant, or the old term thing was the blind men and the elephant, but, you know, the visually impaired elephant, that each person has a glimpse of the truth. And each person has a different kind of reflection of what they see to be true. So does that...
Well, let me push you a bit on that.
Okay. I'll do what I can.
Does every group have part of the truth, or are some groups wrong?
I'll just say from my own experience, I wouldn't say that in my experience that every group, I have run across some extremist groups that have, whose basic philosophy seems to be human dignity, anti-human dignity, someone else's human dignity. Mm-hmm. One group that comes across is when I've run across members of what used to be called the skinheads or the white power. Uh-huh. I would not say that I haven't seen glimpse of ultimate compassion and kind of like God's glory in a couple groups I've met. In terms of other world faiths, I've met where are organized, respected by their peers, community enhancing, family embracing, religious organizations.
You can join hands with those folks.
Join hands. Uh-huh. One of the things Thomas Merton, who's been passed away many years ago, but who is kind of like a religious inspiration, someone who I've enjoyed reading over the years.
Catholic monk.
Catholic monk, a monastic, Seven Story Mountain. Mm-hmm. Has written many books. And I remember him saying once that he found sometimes more in common with folks from other faiths who were contemplatives than he did in his own. Mm-hmm. That at the core, I mean, there's one God, and God is awfully big. Mm-hmm. And who are any of us to think that we are the only ones that have the whole truth? And that no one else has any of the truth. I mean, that's...
We're talking with Karen Bush, who is the current president of the National Campus Ministry Association, and as well the United Church of Christ campus pastor here at the University of Illinois for the last 21 years. Listeners who would like to ask her a question or make a comment or disagree with her may call, and we're eager to have other people join this conversation. Anywhere the program is heard, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. And that's true. You may use that number even if you're listening on the Internet at WILL.UIUC.edu. Anywhere in the continental U.S., you may use that 800 number. Local callers in the Champaign-Urbana area may reach several local lines here in the studio by punching in 333-9455. So local callers, 333-WILL, and we are eager for your participation. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for the program, and I get to ask a lot of questions, which I enjoy, but I'm happy to have others help me out. Karen, we have known each other for a long time in this community. How do you balance your life? I know you're married. I know you have two kids. You're available to students 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you also try to involve faculty in your programs. How do you do it all?
I don't do it all. I try my best. I try my best. Let me pause and think about that for a second to give the best answer I can. I tell you, when I first started, and when you were starting out too, answering machines hadn't even been developed yet. And I tell you, those were tricky days, uh-huh. because even to make contacts with students, you had a choice. And it was always the phone or snail mail. You could call at 6:30 at night or early Saturday morning. And other than that, you weren't going to catch students in.
Right.
So one of the things that has really helped, I'll say, in the outreach that I've tried to do is email uh-huh. and working with the web and being able to communicate with people all around campus.
And cell phones.
But particularly I can send out a message, get feedback from students, have all kinds of kind of pastoral contact, and to set up appointments, which sometimes can take a lot of time. But on the email, you can just, dang, there you go. You have it. And also just inter global communication with folks on email so we can have all kinds of contact. I know when I first started out and I was single, I did have this almost, call it a messiah complex. It's almost kind of a sense of arrogance that I had to do it all. Uh-huh. If I didn't do it, then I was really letting people down. And having children was very humbling. And when I felt the limits of my energy as a mother and feeling that my first calling is really as a mother. And then next comes, and wife, and next comes as a pastor, and realizing that I needed to delegate, and that's where student leaders come in. Mm-hmm. That I find I work with a team of students, and not in any way to compare myself with Jesus, he's my role model, and he worked through the disciples. He didn't do it all on his own either, and so we little peons out here can learn so much. That I have student leaders that we get together. In fact, right before coming here today, I met with my student leadership team, and they are an integral part of the programming, and they run so much of it. And so I facilitate many others doing ministry is kind of how it comes down to.
What do the students get out of being on the leadership team?
It'd be interesting what they would say if they were here. I'll have to say they amaze me. They are so talented and gifted in so many ways. I know there are students that come through who the most comfortable position for them is to be a leader, that if they're not in leadership, they might not even be involved. That's some of them that come through. And sure. There are others that I hear them say they've gotten so much, they want to be able to give back, that they've they want to give to others some of what has been given to them. But it'd be interesting what they would say, but I would imagine they would say they get the satisfaction of knowing that they've left a legacy of a kind, of some of the values that they've developed on helping each student feel like they matter, also letting each student know that they can make a difference in making the world a better place, that it really makes a difference. Like a number of students were out clearing up the Riverwalk by Homer Lake on Saturday morning, and the students were just telling me today how they cut down all these honeysuckle trees that aren't supposed to be in Illinois and how good that felt, that they did that. And the student leaders set that up. Mm. In fact, because of a death in the family, I wasn't even there at the leadership meetings when they planned that.
Uh-huh.
And they also planned another meeting that I wasn't at because, again, the death of my father-in-law who just passed away. There's two teams of students that are planning programs they can do to help with Katrina recovery. Mm-hmm. And one team is planning what can they do for local people who've been brought into our community, and another team's planning what they can do in the South. And the teams on their own came up with doing a car wash, and they raised $400 on Saturday, of which, to be honest, I wasn't at any of the planning meetings. I wasn't at the car wash. They did it all. And to me, that is inspiring, that I can sometimes need to step out because of my own needs in life, such as a death of someone dear to me. And the students just move forward full throttle. Huh. That's part of the ways I stay sane, is I'm working with, say, wonderful. I'm not alone. Sure. I don't have to do it all.
Sure. Now, you're also part of a a church, which is called Community United
yes.
Church of Christ.
Yes.
And do you get support and help from that congregation, that community of Christians as well?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh, yes. I have found the value. Years ago, I was really not what I've considered a churchy person. In fact, I was a very serious critic of institutional religion and still am in a number of ways. But I have found through this church the value of community and being with like-minded people who have similar values that can work together. And an example that would be is when I first came to this community, I, as I have for many years, had very strong feelings and passions and convictions about the importance of working for justice for all people, including and especially in this time in history for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. And in the context I'd been in before, I felt rather alone. Felt like I was a bit of a thorn in people's sides.
Was this when you were in seminary?
It's when I was in seminary, yes. There were many wonderful gifts and ways I was embraced there, but that was one where I was considered kind of a thorn in a number of people's sides, I have to say, kind of discomfort.
Why was that an important issue for you? And why do you say that it's a crucial time right now for that issue?
It is, at this point in history, this is the key issue where the church universal is leading the way in the spiritual annihilation and condemnation and pain of a large group of people that are brothers and sisters, many of them Christian, many of them people of other faiths. And although the church has done many things, you know, we think of the Crusades, we think of a lot of destructive things the church has done in history over the years. You know, many Nazis were Christian. Hitler was Christian. I wasn't alive in that time. But this is my time in history. And this is the moment on earth that I'm here. And this is, from my understanding, this is one of the great evils in this time in history. And the church universal is a major part of what is creating this pain for so many people. So anyway, that's...
So you disagree with Christians who see homosexuality as evil or sin?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Why?
To see that homosexuality is a sin, oh, gosh, do we have a couple hours? To begin with, we can start with, if you look at just behaviorally, I've worked on a college campus for too many years and have journeyed with too many heterosexual people who are struggling in all kinds of ways. And I worked as a hospital chaplain, was a confidant of too many people that I could write a book on all the ways that wounded human beings have used their heterosexuality, as heterosexuals, have used their sexuality to hurt others, to begin with. A person's orientation, a particular orientation, is not inherently moral or immoral. It's what we do with who we are. It's what we bring to our orientation. So there are just, so a person who is wounded and has come out of a background of pain and has not, and it can, whether they're lesbian or gay or straight, can do harm to themselves and can do harm to others, or they can use their sexuality and be part of, their sexuality can be a gift that they find fulfillment in covenant relationship with others. It's not a matter of what the orientation is. It's a matter of who the person is on the inside.
Now, you started out by saying that you were very concerned early on in your campus ministry with working for rights for gays and lesbians and transgendered folks.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of rights are they missing?
Well, one of the things we had, in fact, Mike Mulberry is the pastor of our church, and he just gave a brilliant sermon this morning on this issue of challenging our church. How do we move forward? We're an open and affirming church, which means we have worked through and have done a lot of work looking at ourselves to make sure that we are a safe place where all can come to our table, lesbian, gay, straight, bisexual, transgender, that all are welcome to our table. But we don't stop there. Where do we go? And the right to marry. Now, I have been performing same-sex weddings since the mid-80s, and you, Steve Shoemaker, were one of my role models in this because you were doing this long before I was. But the rite.
But sadly, that's not. It's not a legal ceremony. It's a ceremony that celebrates
the
love and commitment two people are willing to make to one another. But for gays and lesbians, it's not legally recognized still, at least in this state.
Right.
And nationally, as a legal marriage.
We just had Evan Wolfson, as you know, because you hosted him, who I was privileged to spend some time with this week with other clergy and others, coming in and helping us think this through so that we can be even better at helping others think this through, of when you sit down and you look at two women who have been living in committed, loving, beautiful family life for some years, or you look at two men who've been living in covenant family life for some years, and how do you look them in the eye, and how do you look their children in the eye and say, you are not worthy, you are somehow, I get the privilege, but you do not get this privilege. Well, you do not get this protection. You are not worthy. You are somehow, God has a different view of you. It's extremely personal to so many people in our family, our human family, and so destructive and painful.
And when did you first become aware of this issue? As a moral issue, as a civil rights issue?
I think when I was a college student, I had a terrible crush on a young man who I found out later was gay. Hmm. And it got me thinking. It just really got me thinking. In fact, folks might find this interesting. He came out to me the night before I left for seminary.
Huh.
After this kiss that I'm like, now this is a little confusing because, you know, I'm a kiss, but on the other hand. And he was going to a very conservative Nazarene church where I found that. That's what really got me asking a lot of questions of, he's one of the best people in terms of his character, his kindness, the beauty of his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a evangelical Christian group who I had embraced some of their ideals and thoughts about homosexuality that would have said that he could be accepted in the community of faith as long as he was celibate. And that got me just really struggling with, why should I, as a straight woman, have the privilege of family and the privilege of a love partner and a covenant partner for my life? And he wouldn't. And that got me, that began a long journey within the lesbian gay community for me.
I want to get back to some of that, but let me give the phone numbers again for callers who might like to join the conversation. In Champaign-Urbana, punch in 333-9455, and you can be part of this live conversation here on AM 580 WILL with our guest Karen Bush, who is the current president of the National Campus Ministry Association and the local United Church of Christ campus pastor here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. If it's a long-distance call for you, we can save you some money. Use 1-800-222-9455. So 1-800-222-WILL with comments or questions for our guest, Karen Bush. Karen, let me take just a moment to let listeners know who our guest will be next week. We'll be talking with Jennifer Bishop Jenkins from the Murder Victim Families Against the Death Penalty Group. She'll be talking with us next Sunday, October 16, here on Keeping the Faith. On October 23rd, Jim Quigley, a professor from New York, will be talking with us by phone about a lot of issues around energy conservation. The last Sunday in October, we'll be hearing from someone who's involved in a peacemaking ministry. In November, we have several interesting guests scheduled already, including Professor Stephen Carlson, who will be talking about the Secret Gospel of Mark. So that will be an interesting program later on. I see we have a couple callers waiting. Let me just say one word about the University YMCA before I get to those callers. The Y does sponsor in part this program each week here on WILL. The Y is the oldest campus ministry at the University of Illinois. It's now in its year 132.
Wow.
And I've been involved as executive director of the Y for the last 6 years before I was there. a Methodist minister. John Jordan was the director. Before that, a Presbyterian layman was the director. But we all try to work with the rest of our program staff and others, with students helping develop the kind of leadership that you also develop at UCC. The Y is involved in a number of programs. Alternative spring break programs. I think we have 16 or 17 different groups that we send out doing service projects all around the country during the winter break and fall break and spring break. We have students who are tutoring in the public schools 2 hours a week, a couple hundred of them, with our vis-a-vis program. We have other environmental programs and a lot of things at the Y. Some of the programs we have that are open to the public, including even older people, faculty, staff at the university, of course, but also community folks. Know Your University, this Tuesday at noon, we'll be hearing representatives Naomi Jacobson and Rick Winkle talking about a view of Illinois from Springfield, talking about some of the decisions made by representatives concerning the university particularly. So that's this Tuesday, October 11, at the University Y, 1001 South Wright Street. Call if you'd like to make a reservation for lunch, but even if you forget, come up and you can get lunch anyway, or you can bring your own or just listen to the discussion. That's this Tuesday at noon. This Friday at noon, Friday Forum, the topic will be, can an individual make a difference in assisting the peace process around the world, with the example of the Congo? Our speaker will be Friday noon, October 14, Robert Resigliano, Director of the Institute of World Affairs and Peace Studies Program at University of Wisconsin. So those are a couple of programs coming up at the Y. Let's go to our phones. You're on the air with our guest, Karen Bush, line one. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I tuned in late, and you may have covered this issue, but I'm an RN, nearly 7 years old. My question is, how do you honor, I work with people who are dying, how do you honor the sexuality of a person? It doesn't, to me, matter whether what kind of plumbing they have, but how do you honor at death that kind of commitment? And I'll hang up and listen to your guest.
Don't hang up yet. Hang up yet. Tell me more about what you're asking, because I like your question, and I want to make sure that I'm understanding your question.
Yes.
Tell me a little more what you're thinking.
Yeah. Well, what I'm thinking is, when people are dying, that's we accepted people no matter what. I mean, it didn't matter what their sexuality was. And I think in life we should do the same thing. That's my point. And my question is, how do you honor that, during life? I know that the church is your orientation, but how do you honor that? This is a program about keeping the faith, and I think that's a very important pilgrimage. How do you honor it?
In light of especially the context of our conversation, and you have to let me know, though, you may have hung up and are listening, so if I don't hit what you're looking for, I apologize, is we've been speaking about members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community. When I think of one of the things that's so important is for any of us when we are on our deathbed, is that we can have our family around us, and that our family can have full access, and that our family is acknowledged, and that our life partners are validated, that the hospital staff and that the doctors would validate and respect, and I like your word, honor, and would honor this most significant relationship in the life of this person who's getting ready to pass over. And one of the things that I know has been a tragedy for some folks in recent history is if they were lesbian or gay and their life partner wasn't even allowed to be in the room with them. Can you imagine? Or maybe family members wouldn't allow that person to be in the room. And just to be at that point, when actually as a chaplain, and I know you've seen this as a nurse, that dying is something that it's a journey that we all are going to come to that point where we move on to what is next for us. And it actually can be a beautiful time of celebration, of closeness and intimacy, and it is in a very important time, and it's an important time for us to be with those that we are most connected to. And so just that the staff would reach out and be embracing and respectful of those people that are most significant to that person, which I can tell, dear caller, from your tone and from your question, I have no doubt you have been one of those nurses. And we thank you for that, because a good nurse, a sensitive, intuitive nurse, is like an angel on earth.
We have another caller waiting on our toll-free line, line 4. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I appreciate the program and wanted to know if you have, Karen, if you have suggestions for gay and lesbian people working within the Catholic Church to make changes. And I think you're probably aware of what we're up against, the male hierarchy and the papacy. And I'll hang up and listen to your questions and answer.
Oh, my goodness. God bless you to begin with. I mean, whatever context that lesbian, gay people find themselves in, I would put the Methodist Church. I would put the Presbyterian Church. The UCC has work to do. And I'm going to get back to your question, but we may sound like we're so righteous and wonderful. Would you know, even with the United Church of Christ, out of all the churches in the state, only 5% are open and affirming. We all have work to do.
The UCC denomination can ordain, though, someone who's openly gay or lesbian to be a pastor, which most denominations cannot do, including the Roman Catholic Church that our caller asked about.
Yeah, it's true. And at the UCC, the General Synod this summer just voted as a denomination to affirm gay marriage, mm-hmm. Which is very important. Oh, it'd be interesting, caller, to have a conversation with you, because you're someone on the inside. You're someone right there in the trenches. And to hear how you've done what you do, I think, how in the world, it's important that people come out. At the same time, how do you come out when there's so much that's going to be stepped down on you? I humbly say that I struggle with you in that. And as I listen to others who are struggling, the any way that people can come out, dare to come out, but that's even there is a simplistic answer to a very complex and painful and important struggle. I'll say that a friend of mine, daughter, just graduated from seminary from the Methodist Church. And I'm speaking to something that I know more immediate, though I think it parallels in some ways with the Catholic community. And she wrote this amazing letter to the bishops of the Methodist Church. And this is not to slam individual members of the Methodist Church, but I am frustrated with the hierarchy and the overall policies of the Methodist Church, as with others. She wrote this amazing letter because she is a powerfully gifted pastor and future clergywoman. She's not ordained yet, but saying this about her journey as a lesbian. And she has a life partner and what she would love to give to the church. And she was shut down by the bishops, just shut down and cut out. Her partner is just also graduated from seminary and is going to UCC. And in contrast, has just been embraced. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of work to do. And the Catholic Church has so much riches and depth of spirit that the Protestant Church, we Protestants have so much to learn from and gain from. But it's a big wheel that moves so slowly. I would love to know what the caller would say to that question.
Evan Wolfson, who was the Millercom speaker Thursday night and spoke at the YMCA Friday Forum last Friday, did remind folks that time is something we have to remember. That yes, speak the truth, yes, work for justice now, but have some confidence that in the future more people can be educated, more people can learn, more people can find out they have friends who are gay and lesbian and learn that, these are fine folks. And then it becomes a personal thing. And he really focused on time. We're running out. We've got 20 minutes or so, but let's bring in another caller from line one. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. We talk about frustration. I think there is a frustration in me, and Karen, you're a friend of mine. You know who I am, probably.
Hi, WW.
yeah. There is an issue. There are perspectives on why, say, certain Christians think that homosexuality is a moral issue that simply don't go addressed. It's not about excluding. There is an issue of the design of creation and the Creator's fingerprints. and purposes behind that of reflected glory, of masculinity and femininity, that aren't talked about. Let's work with those issues and understand why evangelical Christians see this as a moral issue that plumbs deep, and that we grieve over the exclusion. There are many, many people who fight moral issues that are also excluded in our society, and we ache for that. But that's the first issue. The second issue is smaller, I wanted to bring up, is where do we get the idea that Hitler is a Christian, or was?
He was baptized.
Well, he was baptized, but that has very little to do with soteriology. Steve, you're a seminary-trained guy. You know that profession or externals have never in anyone's theology measured up to being named in the Book of Life. That's not Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox. That's not Roman Catholic. That's not Protestant. How many sermons have we heard that it's not about the words you speak, but the actions? By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Not by profession, not by a ceremony. Right?
But we're also told not to judge. So it's not for me to say who's Christian or who isn't, or who's a faithful Buddhist or who's a faithful Muslim.
I don't think that's a right reading of the text. We're told always to look at people's fruits and to make an evaluation. Ultimate judgment at the throne is God's, and that's what the judgment is referring to. But we got to start parsing the text here and looking at why we're saying what we're saying. I hear evangelicals don't speak up because they're going to get shut down. Why did the bishops shut down? Because there's a really big set of theological issues that rarely get addressed.
Well, let's let our guests respond to at least the ones you've raised.
Right.
Thank you for the call.
And as you know, W Square, mm-hmm. One of the things I've appreciated is the caller just called in, and I have had a number of helpful conversations. And one of the things that Evan Wolfson, who was in town this past week, encouraged all of us is the importance of dialoguing with each other, to dialogue, and dialogue some more. And to put aside our preaching and to put on kind of like our listening ear so we can hear one another, try to understand one another. And the caller who just called in has been actually very helpful to me. And sometimes one of my shortfalls can be I can get kind of preachy and self-righteous rather than being able to listen and then be able to work with that person that we can think together, and I can make the points together, and I can hear their points, and we can move together to see what we have in common. And then in that atmosphere, we can share and find inspiration. And I appreciate, say that with, there is, sometimes we as, for lack of better words, liberal, progressive, can get so harsh and almost self-righteous in our kind of hammering that it's like you can yell so loud that it's hard for the other person to hear. And it really is, and it's one of the things I so appreciate about Evan Wolfson is, he is someone who I think, and it's something that's a growing edge for me, that he can quietly listen and then share the truth that he sees and he knows, and share the facts that are is going to be what that other person needs to hear, and maybe at times vice versa, so that all can move together. And he was mentioning there are those individuals that they have made up their mind. They are clear and they are hardcore, and there is no opening heart there for them to hear. But that's not the case of this caller. I know that, and he knows what I'm saying, and that together we will continue. there's a lot more that can be said there, but I think I'll stop at that point.
Let me switch to another important topic for campus ministry, and that is, you've talked about, as president of the National Campus Ministry Association, you go to these annual meetings, you talk with campus pastors from Protestant and Catholic and other faith groups, but there's been a large slipping of support financially for campus ministry from almost all denominations, not everyone, but why is that?
Well, I can say one of our to our larger groups in the NCMA, National Campus Ministry Association, is probably 40% of our membership is Methodist. And historically, Methodists have been those who've given the most resources to campus ministry. So when they've cut back, you know everyone's being cut back. But what I've seen across the board is campus ministry is being cut like all nonprofits are being cut. We're not in a unique category. We're not being targeted. We're not being abandoned while everyone else. And it's a sad state of affairs that, as I know, in the Illinois Conference, they had a statewide capital campaign that fell way short. And so the nursing homes are being cut. Colleges, you know, the colleges, the denominational colleges are being cut. And I hear a vision for campus ministry. There's a commitment to campus ministry for that young people at the cornerstone key points in their lives when they are finding out, discovering what are their core values separate from mom and dad at home. Who do they want to be? What is the meaning for their lives? What do they want their lives to be about? What does it mean for them to be a person of faith now that they've moved outside the nest? How are they going to plot the next course of their life? When they're at these key points in their life, that pivotal moments that are going to really impact the rest of their lives, when I get out there and talk to church people, I hear people having passion for it, but it's just hurting. There's a whole, you know, where is our money in our country going? And I think that's a whole nother conversation. We do seem as a country to be putting a lot of money in particular places, and then there are other places of high value that are terribly hurting. And campus ministry is just one. But again, I look at, you know, people of kind of need everywhere are being kind of hurt in this country. But
when you look back at your last 21 years as a campus pastor on this University of Illinois campus, what are the incidents that stand out that make you feel like you really made a difference?
That's a wonderful question. You know, I just got a letter, actually a few months ago, from an alumna who graduated, oh, it's been a while, maybe 10 years ago. It was nice. She sent a check. I might throw that in there, which is very nice of her. And she said, she wrote, it was a letter of thanks. I took it straight to the board to say, this is, you know, kind of inspiration. We have a number of letters like this, but this is one that came recently. And she said that she had actually been on one particular career path, and there's nothing wrong with that career path of accounting. That's a very solid, noble, and good way to support your family. But in terms of found campus ministry and some of like the work trips that she went on, like the Y does, and some of the Bible studies that she was part of, going to the Time Shelter with us, helped her listen a little more deeply to who she was down inside, and to be freed up some of the pressures she was putting on herself from the outside, and be able to listen what her heart was telling her about what meaning she wanted for her life. And now she is in education, and just she thanked us that campus ministry was a place where she could listen more deeply to herself. There is a saying that cuts across denominational lines and world religious lines of how do we find God's will for our lives, where our deeper passions meet a real need in the world. So what is something that I deeply care about that brings me joy that also profoundly helps someone else? And where those two intersect, however that may be, you can know that is one way we can know God's will for our lives. And I believe that very much. And so campus ministry is a place to listen deeply to students, encourage them to listen to each other, to listen to themselves. And like we do weekly, daily, and on retreats, how do they listen for the still small voice inside, for God's voice in their life, to tell them who they are, who God is leading them to be. And my understanding is that's going to come out differently for each person. There's not one formula that this is exactly how God's going to speak to you or exactly how it's going to come to you. But where your deep passion that gives you joy, something that gives you joy, meets a deep need in the world is one crystal clear way of finding out God's will for your life.
I'm aware that this next question I'm about to ask is not one that's ever asked on the media, and you certainly don't have to answer it.
I'll do my best.
But as you look back at your past, I ask you, what gave you a sense of satisfaction for you felt you did well? Where have you failed?
Oh, do we have – this is where it helps me to admit this, because I think, you know, they talk about Abraham Lincoln. I'm just a peon. I mean, Abraham Lincoln had amazing impact, but he failed in more things that he succeeded, and that has helped me over the years when I think if I've had more programs fail. We have quite a few students involved, but I could list a long list of programs where one student showed up, no student showed up, that I did my best. I did a good job publicizing and over the years where, for whatever reason, it wasn't meeting a need, it was the wrong scheduling, or it who knows why. Or those times, there was a year in 2000 when my own father was very ill and passing, eventually died, that I wasn't snapping in all cylinders. And so I know my intuition was not on the money well at all. And I can think of some poor judgments I made in terms of lack of sensitivity to some students going through some hard times. And right there, when just to be in the room with someone who's hurting, whoever they may be, and to not be tuned in, mm-hmm. that to me, that's the ultimate role of a pastor, is that you are present with kind of who you are with in that moment or who's in your constituency, that you are fully present to them as much as possible, and that your heart and your compassion is present to them, and that you guide and lead them how to offer that to others in the name and from my tradition, in the name of Jesus. Is that what you're looking for?
That's fine.
I said that's fine.
We're down to the last several minutes, but if there's another caller that would like to squeeze in a question or comment, please call us 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. Our guest is Karen Bush, who is the president of the National Campus Ministry Association and campus pastor for the United Church of Christ, located at the Community United Church. Why don't you give the address for that congregation?
That's 805 South 6th Street on campus in Champaign and corner of 6th and Daniel. I might just throw in there, because UCC are very quiet about putting themselves out there publicly sometimes in terms of pushing people to come to church, but worship is at 10:15 Sunday mornings, and of course everyone would be welcome to come.
And students who might be listening, how could they be involved in your program?
Oh, they'd be very welcome. Parkland or U of I students, I'll put out my email address. Can I
sure.
do that?
Absolutely.
Can I do that? KS-BUSH@UIUC.edu. Just zap me an email, and I'd be glad to get back to you. Any questions or concerns that students might have of anything you've heard today, or you want to get together and talk further about anything that's been said, or you have questions, one of the things that I celebrate as a campus minister are questions. And I'm not unique in that. I think most campus ministers do. One of the things I might add, as we're talking about my perspective with lesbian gay rights, is in the NCMA, we have many point of views. We have many point of views, and you heard mine.
You invited questions. We might have another one on line one. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I wanted to ask what her impression is kind of the state of campus ministry as a whole. Church membership in traditional congregations tends to be graying and declining. Is this pretty much true of participation in student ministry, too, and particularly in light of the fact that now a lot of older adults are students?
That's a wonderful question, caller. Thank you very much. I'll speak first from my own experience and then go from there. Believe it or not, and I totally appreciate what you're saying about the declining membership in kind of mainline churches. In our campus ministry, and we're not unique in this, with what we call the millennials, students who've come to undergrad post-2000, numbers are up. And for example, when in the past we have a number of students in the campus ministry, but not everyone goes to church. I might have 5 to 10 on a Sunday morning. It's not unusual for us now to have 20. And I think the first one Sunday we had as many as 40 that showed up. And in the UCC, where there's not a lot of pressure on students to go to church, that's quite remarkable. And I've heard that from other colleagues though there's always a lot of competition for students' time on campus, this generation seems to have a return to some of the traditional community events. They like being together. They like coming together in community life. And this generation of students has a passion for service like I have never seen before. I have no doubt that the Y, who's always been the forefront leader in our community, is just reeling in students. But that doesn't negate what you're saying, that across the board, mainline Protestant churches, membership roles are declining, and it is a challenge. I'd be interested in what colleagues of mine who work with commuter colleges would say. I know it's always a challenge for students, what we call free time at commuter colleges, because so many of the students, whatever age they are, have full jobs, families, and they say on the average have 15 minutes a day of non-scheduled time, which is quite different from someplace like the University of Illinois, where students live right on campus. Vast majority do not have children and marriages.
We appreciate that call, and our other callers who've asked questions and made comments during this program. We've been fortunate today to have the president of the National Campus Ministry Association in our studio, Karen Bush. Reverend Bush is the campus pastor at the United Church of Christ here at the University of Illinois. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. And let me let listeners know who some of the guests are that will be coming up in the weeks ahead. Next week, we'll be talking with Jennifer Bishop Jenkins, who is representing the group Murder Victim Families Against the Death Penalty. She'll be speaking at a Friday forum at the Y coming up after that, but you get to hear her on the radio first. She'll be at the Y on October 21st at noon if you'd like to meet her and ask questions as well. On October 23rd, our guest here on Keeping the Faith will be Professor Jim Quigley from New York, talking about energy conservation. On October 30, we have a specialist involved in peacemaking from a religious perspective. And later in November, we'll be having Professor Stephen Carlson, who will be our guest, talking about the secret gospel of Mark, a document supposedly discovered. There's some debate about its authenticity, and we'll be debating that on the air in November on the program with Professor Carlson. I mentioned University Y, which is a sponsor of this program. The Y has been on this campus since 1873, developing student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. If you'd like to be supportive of the Y, one way you can do that is donate a vehicle. We're happy to accept cars, trucks, motorcycles, anything with a title, which we then sell off of the students and help support the Y. And you can then get a tax write-off for what we sell that for. If you have questions, call me during the week, 337-1500. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Investigative journalist Seymour Hersh made his name when he broke the story of the My Lai massacre. Looking back, you have to wonder, why did Lieutenant William Kelly tell Hersh he'd killed hundreds of Vietnamese civilians? And Jim Fleming, next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Hersh says, because I asked him. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. WILO programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASC-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-40s and northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-60s and northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s and northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.